We'll be there this morning. I wanted to remind you of a passage from the Apostle Paul as you're finding your way to John 4. The Apostle Paul, late in his life, from a prison cell most likely, began to reflect upon his life. And as I told you last week, he decided to flex a little bit for those who needed to know his story. If you understand it, you understand he was born in Tarsus, raised in Jerusalem, clerked for the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, a guy named Gamaliel, was advancing in Israel faster than any of his friends, was on the fast track to being the head of the Sanhedrin. And then he began to remind everybody he was from the right tribe, spoke the right language, went to the right schools, everything. And then he was more righteous than most everyone around him. But like the Orthodox of today, there was something he needed that he was still lacking. And he began to think about that, and he said, everything that I had accomplished in life, I came to the conclusion was rubbish compared to knowing Christ. It's like saying, I went to Harvard Law and I went to Wharton for an MBA. I clerked for the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I was on Wall Street moving faster than anyone else. And all of a sudden, I realized none of it mattered. And what really mattered was coming to know Jesus Christ, my Lord. For whose sake I've lost all things, he said. And then he said these words, with the rest of my life, here's what I want. I want to know Christ. I want to know the power of his resurrection. I want to share in his suffering, and I want to become like him in his death. And so over the course of these weeks leading up to Easter and around Easter, I wanted us to be people who are praying that same prayer, who are saying these same words. I want to know Christ, and I want to know the power of the resurrection. I believe that the power of the resurrection that raised Jesus from the dead is still working in the world today, and that Jesus Christ is still transforming lives. And so I want this power of the resurrection, and that's why we've called this series Glimpses of the Resurrection. And I told you we'd be in John 2 this week, and then I remembered that this is Baby Dedication Sunday. And so we're going to do John 2 next week, and we're going to do John 4 this week. And I think you'll find out why. But this is the burning bush of Moses. I showed it to you. It's at St. Catherine's in Egypt. And it was there that Moses learned this divine name for God. I am who I am. And what I tried to remind you guys is that that name, I am who I am, means that God is what every situation requires. And that's what John is trying to say when he introduces us to this word, logos. In the beginning was the logos, the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. Jesus is the logo of God. He's everything that this entity is. He is the power of God, present in bodily form upon this earth. He represents everything that the Father is. Jesus made everything. Everything came into existence because of him. He is the divine touch that brought everything that we have into existence. And then John says in verse 14 that this power of God that created the universe, this power of God that's the wisdom of God, the intelligent design of God, took on bodily form and pitched his tent among us. And we got to watch him. And we got to behold his glory, the glory as of the one and only, full of grace and truth, who is at the Father's side. That glory has been made known to us through Jesus Christ. And so what John wants us to do is to ask the question, what would Jesus do in every situation? How would Jesus respond? What would be the way that he would present himself? Because what you see Jesus doing is what God would do. Jesus is the logo of God. He's everything that the entity is. And he's showing himself to be God, whatever the situation requires. And so with that in mind, Jesus calls 12 to follow him. And over the course of the next 3 years, they get glimpses of this glory. This glory as of the one and only, full of grace and full of truth. And they can't believe this bird's eye journey that they're on, getting to see God in the flesh, pitching his tent with us, full of glory, full of truth. And so today we come to John chapter 4, and we read these words. After 2 days, he left Galilee. Jesus himself had pointed out that there was a no prophet who has honor in his hometown. But he goes back to Galilee, and the Galileans welcome him. They had heard about all he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, for they had been there as well. And so verse 46, once more he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. Now, if you're taking a Bible class with me, one of the things you have to know is the geography. You know, because if you don't understand, look how close Bethlehem is to Jerusalem. They're 6 miles apart. Look how close Cana is to Nazareth. They're 6 miles apart. And so what we learn is that Jesus leaves Jerusalem, goes back up toward Nazareth, arrives in Cana, where he had already turned water into wine, and that's your pitch for next week for coming back to hear that story. But today we discover he's back in Cana again. And he's teaching there, he's in the synagogue, he's doing his thing, when people began to come to hear him. And by the way, this is a church that's built where they say Jesus turned the water into wine. But let's keep reading, because Jesus is in Cana, and we know where that is. But now we read, there's a certain royal official, and we'll come back to him in just a second. He has a son who lay sick at Capernaum. Here's a dad who's also a royal official, and he's desperate because his son is sick. Now, if you're a royal official, you've got access to the best doctor in Capernaum. You've got access to the best medicine in Capernaum. You've got access to the best rabbi who says the best prayers in Capernaum. But what we find out is his son still lies sick in Capernaum. And so this man hears that Jesus had arrived back in Galilee in Judea, and so he went to him to beg him to come and to heal his son, who, notice, is close to death. And so what we discover is this royal official's in Capernaum with a sick son. 30 miles away, Jesus is in a synagogue teaching in Cana. And so now the royal official begins to think about, what should I do? The doctor hasn't worked, the medicine hasn't worked, the prayers haven't, I guess they're not working. Oh, but I have heard about this miracle worker, this guy named Jesus, who did some really cool things down in Jerusalem. And now I hear he's back up over in Cana. And so he begins to think, what do I do? He's a royal official. He probably works for King Herod. He's probably Jewish. And he's trying to figure out, do I stay here with my son? Do I support him to the very end? Or do I take a risk, leave him, travel 30 miles, and try to fetch Jesus to come back here and heal my boy? What do you do? This is a desperate father. He's tried everything. There's only one course of action left. Some of us know exactly what it's like to be desperate. And we always say things that we know aren't true. Like, I'll never let anything happen to this child. As if we had that power. But what this royal official knows is, I've got one option left, and that is to see if Jesus will come and to heal my boy. The boy I've walked on the beach with since he was little. The boy that I look into his eyes every day. Now I'm that desperate father, and desperate fathers do desperate things, and this desperate father goes looking for Jesus. And it says that when this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee, he went, he begged him, he asked him to come and to heal his son close to death. I can just picture him kind of running into the synagogue where Jesus is and saying, "Please come fast. My boy, he needs you." Jesus is probably teaching. There's probably a room full of people. And this royal official calls him outside and says, "Please, can't you? Please?" Jesus looks at the crowd around him and he says these words, "Unless you people see signs and wonders, you will never believe." What does he mean by that? What's he trying to say? I think what he's trying to say is, you want a microwavable miracle. What you want is for God to do exactly what you want, exactly when you want it. And you don't understand the way God works. I don't understand the way God works. But Jesus understands the way God works. And one of the things we discover is that you just can't microwave everything and have it come out tasting right. There are some things you have to grow through what you go through. There are some things that are a difficult journey. But notice that Jesus had this difficult journey himself. It says in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8, "Although he was a son, he learned obedience through the things that he suffered." Even Jesus had to suffer in order to learn lessons that couldn't be learned any other way. And Paul says about suffering for us, "I reckon that the suffering of this present time is not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." God's suffering is producing something in us. And so what we have to understand is that sometimes God's not going to do the quick thing because he needs for us to simmer. He needs for us to grow. He needs for us to learn. Aristotle once said, "Patience is bitter, but its fruit is sweet." And so we learn. But this royal official is one who's like, yeah, okay, great. But here, you know, there's an issue here, Jesus, and here's what it is. Please come to Capernaum with me. It's only 30 miles away. Would you please come right now? I've got a steed ready for you. We can make it fast. Are you ready to go? And the man looks at Jesus and says, "You may go. Your son will live." He wants Jesus to come, and Jesus says, "I don't need to come. You can go. Trust me. Your boy's going to be okay." So what would you do if you heard those words from Jesus? Be honest. What would you do? I'd be like, "Jesus, do you want to know his name? Would you like to know our address? Do you need his Social Security number?" I mean, there would be all these clarifying questions that I would want to ask Jesus because I'd want to make sure he understands where I live, what's going on, what the malady is, what the boy's name is. I mean, I'd have all kinds of follow-ups for Jesus. But does it make you feel good to know that even somewhere in Turkana, Africa, right now, where it hasn't rained for 5 years and where people are just desperate, does it make you feel good to know that Christ knows what's going on there? And he knows their name. and he knows what's happening. You might remember earlier in John's gospel, he is going to see Nathanael under the fig tree. And everybody's going to be so amazed, and Jesus says, I got better things to do than that. But what it tells us is that Jesus knows what we're up to. And he cares. You may go, your son will live. And notice what it says. He took Jesus at his word and departed. Taking Jesus at his word is trust. It's believing in things hoped for. It's having confidence in things not yet seen. It's faith. It's trust. It's believing that if Jesus gives us the assurance, we can trust it. We sing a song often about this. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus. And what I know is there's no other option when you're desperate. You trust in Jesus or you trust in horses and chariots and things that you know won't last. But it says, it's so sweet to trust in Jesus and just to take him at his word, to rest upon his promise and to know, thus saith the Lord. Jesus, Jesus, how I trust him. How I've proved him o'er and o'er. Jesus, Jesus, precious Jesus. Oh, for grace to trust him more. Is that you? Oh, for grace to trust him more. Here's a royal official who was used to taking orders from the king. And when he heard the person he wanted to hear from say the words that he wanted to hear, he took them at his word. And he knew, that's good enough for me, and he left. And he departed, and he began his journey home. But the question as he journeyed home is, how does he journey? Because remember how I'd have all those clarifying questions about name, address, social security number? The other thing that I would be doing all the way home is I would be doing one of two things. I'd either be all the way home trying to figure out how I'm going to explain this to Suzanne when I get home. Jesus isn't with me. I'm supposed to have fetched Jesus. I didn't fetch Jesus. How am I going to explain all this? I could walk home in doubt. I could walk home asking all the questions about, did I hear him right? What am I going to do if it's not the way Jesus said it was? How am I going to explain this? Or I could do what Paul tells us to do in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. I could walk home in faith. Believing in things hoped for, convinced of things not yet seen. I could actually venture home planning the party to celebrate the healing. But how do I venture home? You see, we can venture home down doubt's road or faith's road. And we all know what Elizabeth Elliot said is often true for us. Don't dig up in doubt what you planted in faith. If you took Jesus at his word, stay convicted, hold on to hope, and keep walking. And so the man begins to make his journey home. And the man departed, and while he was still on his way, he sees one of his servants coming, probably on a horse, riding up to him, and he met him with the news, a big smile on his face. His fever broke. Your boy's okay. And when he inquired as to the time his son got better, they said yesterday at 1 in the afternoon, the fever left him. And the father realized that was exactly the time Jesus had said, "You may go, your son will live." So, what are the lessons that we learn here? Quickly, life will make you desperate. You won't live long upon this earth before there's a moment where you find yourself in a desperate situation. Jesus said, "In this world, you will have trouble. Count on it." And what all of us know is parenting is desperate business. It was interesting this week for me to look back at all the healing stories of Jesus and notice how many times they involve children. It's a challenge. It's a challenge that we all have to understand. Desperation causes us to cry out. And we discover that our desperation has made us desperate for God. So, stay desperate. Stay desperate. That was the secret of David. That was the secret of Paul. God wants to be wanted. Stay desperate. Take him at his word. And number three, keep walking by faith. Not by doubt. Because it's sweet to trust in Jesus. This man took Jesus at his word and departed. And I wonder how many of us need to take Jesus at his word today. Trust him more. Lean on his promises. And to know, thus saith the Lord. What we all know is that parenting is hard work. It's hard. And for some of us, it's been desperately hard. And we as a community of faith, we come together at moments like this, first off to bless these three kids that have been added to us, but then also to remind each other that we're here for each other. In the good times, in the bad times, in the celebrating times, and in the hardship times. That we're here to be the hands and the feet and the mouthpiece of Jesus and to remind each other we've got to keep taking Jesus at his word. We've got to trust him. We've got to walk by faith, not by sight. And we've got to keep our eyes constantly fixed on the one who has promised us that this world isn't our home and that he's coming again so that everything will be made right. And we'll have eternity with him. If you're subject to the call of Christ this morning in any way, if we can minister to you, if we can pray for you, if we can encourage you, that's why we're here. We're not in a hurry. And we encourage you to come to the front as we stand and sing this song.